Okay, so this talk is titled Local Models 2, but it's not really about local models. Not quite. So what I'm going to do is try to give an idea of the point counting formula that Monk used in his first talk on Monday for the modular curve. Okay, so begin with y. Y of n, so this will be the modular curve of full level n, so the parameterizes of the curves with an isomorphism. So I've been kind of saying this kind of stuff. So if you're over an algebraic equal field, then you literally just require an isomorphism, a level of groups. But if you're not over an algebraic equal field, then this side has a Galois action, and you require this to be a Galois covariant isomorphism. In other words, you require this to be the action of Galois and this to be trivial. All right, so fix a prime P with that's prime to n. And what we're going to do is study the points of y mod p. All right, so we're going to look at q equals p of the r. So the way this goes is you split up. The y of SQ is some kind of parameter moduli space of the curve, the original structure. You split this up into isogeny classes, and you count points within each isogeny class. All right. So what you're going to do is you're going to fix an elliptic curve E0 over FQ. All right, it's defined over FQ, and then this will be all the kind of elliptic curves E alpha with level structure such that E is isogenous over Q to be zero. Alright, so our goal is to see how many points there are, like to give a group theoretic description of the number of points. Okay, so basically the idea is that when you have a an object like that, E alpha, where E is isogeny to zero, suppose I have some mass in here, some element in here, points, and so this gives me over FQ. And so fix, take some isogeny, suppose I have an isogeny F from E0 to EF. Alright, what does it give me? So to each elliptic curve, I can associate many linear algebraic gadgets. That's essentially what cohomology is. Alright, so I can E an elliptic curve over FQ. First of all, I can take a tau cohomology. Alright, so look at this. Where L is not mathematical theory that can be right? And so this is actually just the inverse limit, by definition. That, and each of these pieces is, of course, dual. By dual, I mean Hom's into V mod L and V to just have a Galois module. So this has, first of all, it's not just a vector, it's not just a VL module, it's a VL module of the continuous action of the Galois group. That's here. In particular, I have the Q Frobenius in there. It's going to be a geometric Frobenius. No, it's going to be arithmetic Frobenius. And so that's essentially determines the entire action of Galois. So as Galois modules, it's this thing is a dual of the Allen torsion. So that's one structure that you can associate with the elliptic curve, and somehow it has something to do with covers of the elliptic curve. I call it out of the elliptic curve or into. All right. The second gadget you're going to see, so for L away from P, this is one way to attach a linear algebra gadget. For L at P, what we have is that due to an AA module that I defined earlier, this crystal, right? So you get the crystalline cohomology of E over what is ZQ? ZQ is the unique unramified extension of VP with residue field FQ. All right? So, by definition, this is the inverse limit over N of so remember, we have this crystal, and I said that you can so for any nilpotent thickening, you can evaluate this crystal on that thickening, in particular, you can evaluate it on ZQ mod QVN ZQ. Okay? This is just the thing that we saw earlier today. And the point is that powers of P always admit that you can always make sense of PVN over N factorial. That's what's going on here. So what kind of structure is this? Well, this is a what's called an F isocrystal. Well, not this. Well, so let me take and then invert T. All right. So this is an F isocrystal. What do I mean by that? So remember, we have the Frobenius from E to its Frobenius twist, and then we have the Vershibum V to E in the composition. It's given by T. So by functoriality of this pseudo-A module construction, you get mass in the other direction, so from H1 Chris of E, I get a mass from to H1 Chris of its Frobenius twist. Its Frobenius twist, you can identify it with just pullback under sigma. So sigma is is a unique list of Frobenius. Or in other words, it's the generator of the group of automorphisms of dq over dp. Okay?
Or it's one of them.
It's the generator of the list of Frobenius. So I get this map f, and similarly I get a map v going out of direction that comes from the Vershismo. All right, and they satisfy FV equals VF equals P. All right, so all right, and when you invert P, what you end up with is what's called an F isomer. It has.
So this Frobenius is an isomorphic Frobenius.
Yes. No, the figure sum is also the arithmetic Frobenius. I said geometric and then switched to it. Okay, so this is the kind of structure that I have on H1 Chris. So basically, away from P, I just have a Gauss homology, and at P, I have this somewhat twisted structure, all right? Because this map F here is not linear, it's semi-linear with the Okay, so now how do we describe y of q? Well, so fix an isogeny, like so, then when I can pull back, so let me fix certain things. So let HP be the Exalt homology of E0 over FP bar with coefficients in the prime to p finite adults, so basically all the L's that are prime to p, and let h sub p be the Chris-Lane homology. All right? Okay, so this is a Galois module, and this is an F isomer. So I have this isogeny, then I can pull back the Exalt homology and this gives me a lattice. This is a Galois stable z hat. Prime to p for finite integers.
Maybe you don't want AFP to plot V hat p for coefficients.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, that's not, otherwise, it would not be a lattice. It would just be an isomorphism. Okay. So this is a Galois stable V hat p lattice. So that's one piece of data that you get from the choice of isogeny. Another one, of course, is you can always pull back the crystalline homology. So you can pull back the crystalline homology. That gives you an FV stable EQ lattice. All right? And of course, all right, so I thought that we also have this level structure. So from these two things, we get we have we can associate the choice of element x and the isogeny f. We have a Galois stable lattice inside of HP, right? And we get a FB table. That's a CP let the prime CP lattice, and this is a GQ lattice. We also have a level structure. The level structure alpha x gives us an isomorphism from again, it's all right. So this is essentially the data that you. Yeah. And it's fine to see. Right, so this is essentially, if you fix a point x and a tori-tori cosine, you get this collection of data. So, now let me set YP to be the collection of pairs L and alpha. We call it beta. L and beta, where LP inside of HP is a Galois stable lattice. And beta is an isomorphism that's also Galois covariant. All right, and let me now set Y sub P to be the collection of lattices in here that are FB spaces. Okay, so what we now get, well, let's make one more definition, and now let me set so as you can see, if we fix a choice of isogeny for any point in my isogeny class, then I get a triple consisting of a pair here and a lattice here. Alright? So what I see is that, so I want to somehow not have this isogeny, this choice that I made. I want to see how much, what happens if I change the choice of isogeny? Well, if I have two different isogenies, they may differ by up to multiple isogeny of U0. Okay? So what I want to look at now is this following group, I, so this would be a group, an algebraic group over Q, and its point in any Q algebra will be, the endomorph of the ring of A,
right,
E zero, centered up with, R.
This will be my group.
I, in particular, I of Q, consists of. Okay. So. Cross is units.
And I think it's like the left one, Q.
Oh, sorry. Yes, thank you. Okay, so. So I kind of act on the LFA Kirk, which is the endomorphism, or the automorphism of the LFA Kirk. So in particular, it acts on the cohomology groups of the LFA Kirk, right? So I have maps. So I naturally act on
HP cross H lower P. And it does so, well, on HP,
it acts Galois covariantly because comes from an actual automorphism of the open curve, so it preserves the Galois structure. And on H sub P, it acts in a way that preserves the FV structure, the actual critical structure. All right? So,
So we have these two actions.
And I want to say that, so we can define a map, FQ, zero, two, so since it acts on H upper P and H lower P, it acts on the spaces Y upper P and Y lower P by simply permuting the lattices within H upper P and H lower P. Alright? So it makes sense then to look at this quotient space, right? I have to act diagonally on Y upper P, Y lower P. And the math is very simple now. It's just the map that we send X to the class of LP XS alpha XS L lower P XS or some choice of isogeny. Any two choices of isogeny will differ by an element in I of Q, so this is well defined. So the claim, I guess the theorem, is that this is a bidash. Right? So you have a complete description of the isogeny class in terms of this more or less group theory object. So give a group theory description of things. Alright, so this is a bijection. We want to prove this. So first you prove injectivity. Okay, let's prove surjectivity. Alright. So essentially, given something in YP cause Y to P, you want to associate with that a isogenous LFA curve that kind of recovers those latitudes for you. So suppose we have after scaling, we can assume which is allowed since scalars are an I of Q, we can scale. We can assume that LP sits inside H1 and you're going to assume that L sub T sits inside of that. So we might as well kind of assume that we have this inside here. This sits inside some power t. Okay. So the point now is that you have a subspace between here and here. So it really is corresponds to. So LP gives me LT bar, which is just a submodule of just a finite etale cohomology. And so what that means is that if you think about it in terms of etale covers or isotonies, to I mean, what is this classified? It's essentially classified m power, sorry, degree m isogeny to the elliptic curve, or the elliptic curve. So what this means is that there is, so you can attach to, this gives me a subgroup inside of E0. M0, so a subgroup that's Galois stable, right? Because this is Galois stable. And so we can just then look at E0 mod P to the P. Well, since P to the P is defined as Galois stable, it's defined over F2. So E0 mod CP is also defined over F2. Right? So this is an F2 curve that's clearly isogenous to E0. Right? And it recovers this lattice for me, L upper D. When I have a natural isogeny from E0 to E0 mod CP and I pull back the lattice, by construction, the way it's set up is that I recover the lattice. So I still need to somehow recover the lattice L sub P. This is a little trickier. And I won't really say, well, enough about it, but the point is that the Dudonnet functor for is not just a functor on a level of elliptic curves of mean variety, but in fact it's a functor on finite group scheme. All right? So when you're working mod P, as I explained like on Monday, P power torsion in the elliptic curve Well, you can't really think of it in terms of point, but you can just think of it as a scheme, and then it's a nice group scheme. And so you can build your if you build like a robust enough DNA theory, then it told you that something like the following, that if I that I can attach to P0 PVN, PVR, let's say, the given A crystal, or given A whatever. That looks like this. And inside of here, I have my lattice. Then that corresponds under the Dubin A functor for group schemes to this is group scheme. Zero, the subgroup scheme is there, and which corresponds to this submodule in the given angle. Alright? So, what we can do now is you can take our curve E to be B0 mod CP, C sub P, and this is the LC curve, which gives me this tuple when I look at it via the natural isogeny from E to E0. Right? I mean, somehow the double structure gets taken care of by itself. Shows subjectivity. I mean, so we've shown surjectivity, now we want to show injectivity. So what I want to say, that if you have two classes in YP cross Y sub P that are related by isogeny, then they must in fact come from the same isogeny, same isogeny as LC curve. Right? So suppose X and Y have the same image. This means that there exists alpha. E0 to EX, well, F and G from E0 to EY, such that you will have the collection LPXF, alpha XF, and L sub C XF differs from alpha C YG, alpha YG, by an H. That's all I mean, that's just the definition. All right? So, what do you want to show?
Pretty exciting part of this one.
Right. So you want to somehow construct construct an isomorphism from EX to EY. That's basically what you want. Okay, so so we have this isogeny H, which so H is not quite an automorphism of E0, it's an automorphism up to scaling. So if I scale it, then I get an actual endomorphism of E0, right? So you find H0 from E0 to E0 such that H is M inverse H0. Then we can replace, F, so, by F A0 and G by G times M, or MG. If you do this, so remember, if I pull this back by H, I get this, right? So if I pull this back by H0, I get M times this, right? So if I now pull this back by H0 and pull this back by M, then I get the same thing, all right? So now we can assume that the tuples are actually equal. So equal to some fixing for LP. So we can do that. So now the claim is that there exists an isomorphism, iota, from EX alpha X EY, comma alpha Y, such that the diagram E0 alpha EX iota beta. And why is this true? Well, so I can somehow formally invert alpha and go along this path, alpha inverse and then beta, right? So that would work in the isogeny category, all right? So, but this inversion, kind of going along this way, works as long as I multiply by a suitably high number, all right? So if I have an isogeny that's not quite a map, I just multiply it by some number and become an honest map. Alright? So M times iota is an actual. So M times iota exists without any doubt. So some M margin. the condition that the latices match up, so m times iota prime, so definitely you can find iota prime such that diagram e0 alpha dx m times theta dy can use for m large enough. Alpha and beta. I've been writing alpha and beta. Oh, sorry. And this is G. Alpha is the level structure. Thank you. Right. So the point now is that iota prime of dx m is zero. Alright, and that says something that you can check by looking at what iota prime does to the cohomology. Right? We know exactly what iota prime does to cohomology because we know exactly how things behave under pullback by alpha, by f and g, in particular by iota prime. Alright? So knowing that tells us that iota prime of dx, the nth order of dx, is zero. Alright? And this implies that the map iota prime to EY factors at some iota, well, m followed by some iota. All right. So this is basically the point is that for if you have a map between L and curves, if you have any variety, then it checks that it's m divisible is equivalent to checking that it kills m words. All right. So this gives me the iota. And again, by construction, since it's an isomorphism. So once you have the existence of iota, then you know that it's an isomorphism because you know what it does to cohomology. Right? You can use the isomorphism. Okay. So this is the isomorphism, and so it shows that x and y are actually the same point in my life. Right? So this implies that x equals 1. Okay, so I still have an algebraic group. Did I erase the statement of zero? So all in all, we have the description that we wanted completely in terms of linear algebra. So the whole kind of the number of points is somehow complete. The point set itself is defined somehow linear algebraically, so we can somehow hope to have some group data information, like group data description, its actual cardinality. Okay. So from that, oh. Now choose spacing. For the true basis for both generalizations of HP and H sub P, and then here we have the Q for beta. And here we have the semi-linear endomorphism F. Right? So when you translate in, so you can now view them as automorphisms of AFP squared or QQ squared, and then so this gives rise to gamma in GL2 of AFP, so that function. And if F gives rise to a delta in GL2 of QQ,
So, let me just try to think of a way to say this. You have delta and...
So, to this gamma, here, the gamma is a semi-convolvent, well, this is somewhat easy to see how it occurs, but it's also true in general for a Bayesian variety, for Bayesian exact same. So, I can look at the stabilizer of gamma, the G of gamma, inside the GO2. P will be a stabilizer, or a centralizer of gamma. And over here, well, so why do I look at a centralizer here? It's because I chose a civilization and then I got the gamma. But if I choose a different civilization, then just conjugate gamma by a different element, so the things in G gamma don't affect the choice of gamma. Right? So over here, on the other hand, this is a semi-linear map, so it behaves slightly differently under change of basis. Right? So if you choose a different civilization, let's say I have an H, and then I change my thing by H. Then delta will change to H delta sigma of H inverse. Okay? Either this or H inverse delta sigma of H, you can work it out. One of these things. So what we should be looking at here is not the stabilizer, but kind of a twisted stabilizer. So this is basically where the twisting happens. So all the twisting somehow happens at P, because a Talis homology of P is badly behaved, so we have to resort to crystalline homology, which is only semi-linear somehow. So let me take I delta to be the group over QP. That's points, any QP algebra will be given by H in GL2 R tensor 2Q such that H inverse delta sigma of H is done. All right? In other words, the possible set of deltas that I can get under the various civilizations in the homogeneous space under GL2 of QQ, I guess, and then the stabilizer of a point, the delta, will be the QP points of this group. All right? Okay. So, here's a theorem. For elliptic curves, it's probably known before, but for Abelian varieties, it's theorem of Tate, which says that endomorphisms of E0 tensored with QL for L not equal to P is equal of H. Let me say this. It's equal to N. Okay. And furthermore, endomorphism of E tensored up the Q is equal to the anamorphism.
HP. All right? In other words,
any anamorphism of the Alpic curve, or in general, the theorem holds for abelian varieties, and basically everything that we did kind of goes through similarly to abelian varieties, it says that you can figure out if something.
Well, it tells us, it says that
anamorphisms are generated, anamorphisms of the Petersburg group in this case, or of the Talbot homology, are in fact generated by honest anamorphisms of your Alpic curve. Okay? And a corollary to this is that the group I that I define the Q group, when I base change to AFP, then that's, and I view it as a subgroup of GL2 via that trivialization, then it's actually just equal to I gamma. And I tensor QP, now I view it as a subgroup of GL2 of QQ via its action on A sub T, then it's actually equal to I delta. Okay? So, now I can kind of define the object that we saw on Monday. So let me take the case of P, the GL2 of VP, inside GL2 of QP, and let S of P, so I pick some R measure and GL2 of QP to take rational values on this, maybe take value 1. FP is the characteristic function of case of P, maybe divided by the volume of case of P, so that integrates to 1 over KP. I define the orbital integral and let FP be any function on here so now I define the orbital integral, which is what we saw on Monday, at least for a particular choice of function. So what we'll do is we will be integrating over the homogeneous space, which essentially counts the various gamuts that you get by different sources of trivialization. All right. FP evaluated on X inverse. I'll come back to the F in a bit. Well, right now. So, how do I use this F sub P? Well, the F sub P I would use to define a twisted orbital integral. Instead of kind of integrating over choices of different choices of gamma that I get, I'm integrating over different choices of delta, right? The twisted orbital integral, so if so for any function, mm-hmm. term interval, to yield delta of C to be I delta of QP.
So by kind of this corollary here, instead of writing I gamma of AFQP, I could have written just I of AFQ. Alright?
Similarly over here, thinking. So here,
QQ. So now instead of going over conjugates, I go over twisted conjugates. So let me now take C sub R to be the characteristic function of GL through DP. Well, let me just write KP. Like so, Stanley theorem.
What's R?
R, and what is R?
So it should be GL to Z Q, not Z.
GL to Z, where is GL to? Where did I get GL to Z?
Oh, KP is
GL to Z Q,
at the top.
Where did I get it?
At the top.
That is GL to Z.
No, on the phi is the function of GL to Z.
No, on the
lower one.
Well,
first line of lower
one. Is it? Oh, yes. Okay. Yeah, but you have
GL2
VP inside of
GL2. The first line of the lower one, GL2 QQ. Five of GL2 QQ.
That's
all the
line.
Are you talking about
the at that point, it's the lower board.
Which
is QP?
First line.
Should
be. Oh, this.
And then the phi
shift.
Phi R.
Phi R to be. Yeah.
In the integral in the lower board, you have phi R.
Phi R.
Phi R. Here, yeah. What about it?
In the integral, the ordinary by R.
Oh, thank you. This is going to be C.
Okay. And what's the R?
The Q is P to R.
Q is P to R.
Oh,
is it?
Okay.
So phi R should be a function. K should not be taking the 0 to
the 0 to Q. D Q. Okay. The theorem is that the number of points of this thing is the volume times the orbital interval of, I know something happened here.